All right, just to say another word about the kind of introduction to this whole Masechta. So the past 2 days we were talking a little bit about just the authority, the Makor of Brachos Hanenin, and now we're going to expand on that. But to say another word about the special zchus of learning this incredible Masechta, every Masechta I know I start off the year talking about just how unique and special the experience is of learning that Masechta, so I plead guilty to that, and that's fine. It should be my worst problem. But there is a special beauty to learning Maseches Brachos, and that's true in many ways. And just to add another way, so Rav Soloveitchik gave many years of shiurim of Brachos and Megillah in a shul here in Manhattan, in the Maria shul, and he would discuss the question that maybe one could think that by focusing on those Masechtas, so maybe they weren't in fulfillment of Talmud Torah on a level Minat Torah, because Brachos, not the first few Prakim that talk about Kriya Shema, but the rest of it is mostly dealing with Mitzvot Rabbanan. Now, we saw yesterday, we weren't 100% sure that we're talking about Mitzvot Rabbanan here, but sounds like it, so if we're talking most of the time here about Dinim Drabanan, or if we're going to learn Maseches Megillah, which is about Dinim Drabanan throughout, so maybe you're not fulfilling Talmud Torah on a level Minat Torah. Maybe if you want to actually fulfill that mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you have to spend your time learning about Dinim from the Torah itself. So maybe you should learn Maseches Zvachim and Menachos, which has very little of that Dinim Drabanan and is almost all Dinim Daraisa. So he would explain that, know that that which Chazal enact becomes part of a Chepsa Shel Torah as well, and we are in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah on a Daraisa level by studying those things also. But I would like to add that it's not only that you're also in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah through learning Dinim Drabanan, but there's a special beauty to it. There's a special privilege. There's a whole other element that we get when we're trying to figure out exactly how Chazal took our avodah to the next level. And we see that from what we've been doing these past few days. So we had to spend some time yesterday and the day before establishing the way Dinim Drabanan work so that we can try to figure out just what brachos are, and that's what we're going to jump off from today. So that whole notion of where exactly a svara plays a role, and what exactly Chazal would be working off of, and that forced us to spend a few minutes talking about the whole structure of Dinim Drabanan everywhere, and what it may say about this particular concept, is really a very fascinating exploration. And so we're going to now move from there today into the specific lessons that it has for us as far as this din in and of itself. And it's really a very special opportunity to try to follow the mind of Chazal and try to understand the messages that they are leaving for us in their enactments and to work within their process. And there's a tremendous gems hidden within, and it's really a fascinating aspect of Talmud Torah. So it's not just that it's also Talmud Torah, but it's a type of Talmud Torah that really has tremendous bracha within it, pun intended, I guess, and it's really a very fantastic opportunity for us. So we left off yesterday saying that we need to figure out what Chazal had in mind enacting brachos, and that there were 2 points that we need to consider. One is the notion of brachos being ke'ein doraisa, and presumably, most prominently, the ke'ein doraisa of Berachas Hamazon, which we'll start off with. And then to go to the very significant concept of asur lahanos me'olam hazeh b'lo bracha, and the related concept of so first, So to say that there is a relationship to Birchas HaMazon, so that we understand on a few levels. We'd understand it intuitively, even if the Gemara didn't mention it, but it does. And in fact, the Yerushalmi mentions it even more so. And there are those who understand, actually, from the Yerushalmi, that perhaps brachos are indeed daraisa because of a relationship to Birchas HaMazon. Birchas HaMazon, again, everyone agrees Birchas HaMazon is daraisa in some form because of the explicit pasuk in Parshas Ekev, V'achalta v'savata uverachta s'Hashem Elokecha. So that we know is a Dimin HaTorah. And the idea that there's some kind of a linkage to Birchas HaNenin, so that's all the more stated in the Yerushalmi. And it sounds like from there that that may indeed be the impression of the Yerushalmi, that maybe there is a direct limud to say that Birchas HaNenin is Daraisa. So whether you take it that far and come to that conclusion, or you assume that indeed it's Drabanan, the way most of us take as a given. So if there is a relationship between Birchas HaMazon and Birchas HaNenin, so what does that tell us? So what is Birchas HaMazon about? And what is Birchas HaNenin about? So it could be that here you have a machlokes, a difference of perspective within the Rishonim. So it could be that there's a difference here between Rashi and the Rambam, and that many others are perhaps in the camp with the Rambam, even though Rashi might be what you would probably guess first. So what is Rashi's position? So Rashi here on our daf, on Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, so if you look towards the bottom of the page, so Rashi says, El Svaruhu, the second to last or third to last Rashi on the page, El Svaruhu, Dechevin Denene, Sarech Lahodos, Lemishavara. That it makes sense that since we have benefited, that we have to give thanks. We have to acknowledge. The two different definitions of the word mean the same thing. To thank is to acknowledge. So we have to give gratitude to the one who created these foods for our benefit. So that we see also later on in the Masechta that Rashi understands Birchas HaMazon in the same spirit. So if that's the case, so then it works out, L'shitoso, that that's what's going on. That there is a notion of hodah, and that's what the bracha is meant to convey. That we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu before eating, just as we also thank him afterwards. And that Birchas HaNenin and Birchas HaMazon have that function. And Chazal ordained Birchas HaNenin ke'in daraisa of Birchas HaMazon. The Rambam, this would be perhaps less intuitive, but if you look at the way the Rambam describes Birchas HaMazon in Sefer HaMitzvos, and I think I put it on the list for you to see. So, Aaron, you have a comment?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, meaning the function of Birchas HaNenin, can we say, though, that's different than, let's say, Birchas HaMazon would be? Meaning Birchas HaMazon is more like a post facto thanking of God for what he provided, but a Birchas HaNenin is almost like a, I don't know if it's a preemptive thanking, but it's almost like asking for permission, in a sense. So is it really, does it really follow the same pattern as a Birchas HaMazon?
So your point is very well taken, because there is a very big svara to distinguish between them. So, for a lot of reasons, the svara to distinguish between them. In general, the whole notion that when we talk about a concept of Netilas Rishus, so that seems to be, by definition, something that only exists beforehand. And Lahalacha, we assume that Birchas HaNenin are only applicable beforehand, and not an option afterwards. And especially if we're going to talk about a concept of Netilas Rishus that seems to also be limited to beforehand. And we'll talk, we probably won't get to it today, is actually a discussion about whether the concept of Nene Me'olam Hazeh B'lo Bracha is relevant to the Bracha Achrona afterwards. So your point on the surface makes a lot of sense. That to argue that there should be a distinction between the two makes a lot of sense. However, at the same time, there's also good reason to connect them because, first of all, of statements in the Bible and especially the Yerushalmi that connects them, and also the general rule of Ke'in D'Oraisa and the assumption that Chazal use a structure, Min HaTorah, to build off of when they make enactments. Doesn't mean it's the only option, but if that's generally the case, then they usually look to that D'Oraisa model to follow. Doesn't mean that there aren't other things we could explore, but that's often the case. Yehuda?
I'd like to point out, even in the Lashon of Rashi, there's clearly a difference, right? In Lamed Hey, Rashi says, L'hodos L'mishabaro, and on, what was it? Memchas, he says, right, L'hodos L'savo, to praise for being full. They're two different things. They're both praise, but they're for two different reasons.
So, work with that for a second. Say, yes, you're acknowledging two different concepts, but still, there's still that basic linkage. Like, there's still the Hodah, but they're coming for different points.
Right.
Even though you could argue that they're not fundamentally different. So let's explore that for a second. Right? So, yes, you're right, the language does have that interesting difference, but are you really thanking for two different things? So you're thanking for your satiety on Daf Mem Ches, but the satiety comes from the food. So here Rashi says, we thank God for the food. And then Mem Ches says, we thank God for the satiety that is there because of the food. So on the one hand, it's interesting that there's a different language. On the other hand, it does come down to the same physical item that caused that.
I might phrase it differently.
Okay.
On Lamed Hey, you're thanking God for, on day four of creation, creating the notion of food.
Mm-hmm.
And on Mem Ches, I'm thanking God for creating the, for sustaining the process of the fact that food fills me and gives me benefit.
Interesting. Could be. So let's grant that distinction also. So within the distinction, so then the point is still all the more so true. Because if we do acknowledge that they're two different things, so it kind of balances the point. So Yaron's point is still true, right? That there's a fundamental difference in what's going on. And still, Chazal made a similar structure for both. So we have two different things happening. So basically, on the one hand, before you eat, you have to ask for permission to take the food. Afterwards, we're grateful for being satisfied. And yet, what do we do in both times? We do the same action. We're moda beforehand, and we're moda afterwards, even though we have different roles to play. And if anything, that strengthens the idea that Chazal are making something Ke'in D'Oraisa, that they are being consistent with their general policy of creating a tool that models itself after the D'Oraisa tool, even if there's reason to say they're doing something a little different. Yes, sir. All right.
I mean, I feel like it's interesting because the Gemara seems to phrase it like, at least logically, the first bracha is a lot more like fundamentally sound than maybe the bracha Barna, both because they talk about aser lo until you have say the bracha, mm-hmm. and also because they include the kal v'chomer of if we have a bracha after, of course we have to have a bracha before. So at least they seem to logically think that. I don't know exactly what the connection is, but the bracha beforehand is a lot more obvious than the bracha afterwards.
Is a lot more obvious, because the kavachomer means it's more obvious.
Yeah, the kavachomer is essentially saying that if I have a bracha afterwards, of course you need a bracha beforehand, so it seems to be saying that the bracha beforehand makes a lot more sense than the bracha afterwards.
Except would it have been as obvious if the bracha achrona didn't exist?
Would it have been as obvious? Maybe if say I think what they're saying, I could be wrong, but that if we're going to start making brachas make sense. Like the Torah may be taught afterwards. It's taught only in regards to only to make the blessing afterwards, because they knew we understand from a Kal v'Chomer that you have to make the bracha beforehand, that we'd understand it from that pasuk, at least what they were saying, so that, like, logically, I guess for them, I would have thought maybe the opposite, but I guess at least in terms of asking permission, it makes a lot more sense for the bracha beforehand than the one afterwards. At least, then there's obviously the deraisa level of it, but that just made only for the kind of pasuk anyways, but, you know.
Okay, well taken. So that's as far as Rashi is concerned. Now, I think Rashi, again, is probably what's more intuitive. If you'd ask somebody on the streets, what do you make a bracha for? So they'd probably say to you, well, what's a bracha? But if you ask a Jewish guy in the street, what do you make a bracha for? So then he'd probably say that bracha is an expression of hodah. But what's a little bit more surprising is the language of the Rambam, which is a gold mine of things to explore, and we'll come back to it many times. But the Rambam, the beginning of Hilchos Brachos, so he first of all draws a connection between the various types of brachos, and that's a part of what will yield much material for later discussion. But connects brachos hamitzvos and brachos hananim. But in doing so he doesn't talk necessarily about hodah, but also refers to essentially acknowledging HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he talks about Berachas HaMazon, is all he basically says, that before or following eating, we have to mention God. So the Torah tells us Uberachta, but doesn't tell us what Uberachta means. So it could be that Uberachta isn't necessarily about Hodah, it's about mentioning God. And mentioning God could have a different function than Hodah. So what function could it have other than Hodah? So one key word that appears in that section in Mishneh Torah, among others, but one key word to zero in on is Yira. Is the sense of reverence that develops from acknowledging God's majesty in many different contexts. And that could be a part of what connects these seemingly different areas of life. The one thing, on the one hand, the things that we enjoy of our benefits, on the second hand, fulfilling religious imperatives, mitzvos. On the third hand, having a third hand, phenomena, natural phenomena. So these three distinct areas, all of which can bring about a sense of God's majesty and an acknowledgement of that, the Yira. So that seems to be a part of what's happening here, a major part of what's happening here, when one pauses and recognizes God in that context. So, if that's the case, so that's very consistent with what would otherwise perhaps be a somewhat surprising drush of Chazal on a pasuk we read a few weeks ago in Parshas Ekev. And that's a drush of a Gemara, a drush in a Gemara I gave you to look at in the Karos. What am I talking about? Exactly, right? The Gemara in Menachos, which comments on that pasuk, Ma'ashem Elokecha Hashem Imach, what does God ask of you? So the pasuk continues to say, Kiyum L'Yira. Moshe Rabbeinu says, all God asks of you is Yira. So what does the Gemara interpret on that pasuk? Me'ah Brachos. Right, that somehow, how Ma becomes Me'ah is a whole discussion, actually, in the Meforshim. It's not so simple how that turns into 100. But somehow it does. That's something we can look at the Torah Tumima if you want. It has a whole discussion about that. But that's not our focus for now. But somehow the Gemara associates with that pasuk the concept of reciting brachos. So that's a very significant point. Right there, Chazal are telling us something very illuminating. That the notion of brachos is associated with Yerushalayim. that pausing and acknowledging God in these contexts is a source of yira, a way to develop your reverence and your appreciation for God in this world. So those three different arenas in which we make brachos, which one could have thought don't necessarily have that much in common, maybe do have that linking them, that they're all ways to develop greater yira. And that association, particularly between Birchas HaMitzvos and Birchas HaNenin, the Rambam connecting them, is a point that we'll come back to in later contexts. But here, that's something that maybe is telling us something here also. So that also reflects upon the Kein Dereis of Birchas HaMazon, because maybe Birchas HaMazon is also about that. That at that time of having been sustained through eating. So the Torah says, V'achalta v'savata v'rachta, and the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim also don't necessarily talk about Hodah in that context, even if it's the more intuitive idea that we would have thought. But just talk about mentioning God at that time, and maybe that's the idea. It's more about Yira. Okay, so far so good. So now, let's try to understand what a bracha would mean if it is motivated more specifically by the idea of Asulahanos and Kolanena Blo Bracha Kilu Goza. So, what function would a bracha have if it's motivated by that? So, in order to understand that, we need to take a detour for a minute, for a few minutes, and try to understand just how literal is that? And before that, what are we even talking about? The notion of eating without a bracha as gezel, is that a literal statement? And what does it even mean in the first place? So, first of all, what are you stealing? The idea that you're stealing something if you eat without a bracha. What are you stealing?
The bracha.
Okay, so are you saying that because that's what comes to mind first, or because... Okay, you're right, Rashi says that. Would you have said that had you not seen Rashi?
No.
Okay, so what would you have thought without Rashi?
Food.
Right, so you would have thought probably the more intuitive thing is that the food is God's food, and you are taking the food without permission. And that's what the subject of the gezeilah is. And it's interesting also because maybe in contrast to the previous Rashi that we were medayik in about the Hodah, this is maybe just a little bit of a methodological point in terms of being medayik in Rishonim. And so a minute ago we were talking about Rashi holding that a bracha is about Hodah. So that Sarech Lahodos was just one word in a much longer Rashi. And you could quibble about how significant it is. Here, this is a two-word Rashi. And presumably, he's telling us something here because it's the Chiddush. That's the whole Chiddush. Because without that, you could think that the more intuitive interpretation is what Ezra's saying, that if Rashi didn't speak up here, so I would think that we're talking about stealing the food. Because that's probably the more intuitive interpretation. So I think that's just something to keep in mind for a second. So probably, reading without Rashi, this is what would come to mind first. That the Gemara is saying that everything belongs to God. Hashem ha'aretz u'mlo'a. And it only becomes ours by reciting a bracha. Ha'aretz nitna l'le'adam kan kodem l'bracha kan l'acha bracha. So if I fail to make a bracha, it's kilu gozel the food. which, if you look in the back of the Gemara, that's what the Maharsha says. More intuitive interpretation. So Rashi is piping up here to tell us, no, don't think what you would have thought. So why not? Yeah? Okay. Okay. So maybe you have a thought, why not? It's something to think about. Well, you will. So it's something to think about, because that's interesting. Is there something objectionable about saying that you're stealing the food? Or maybe it's not that there's something objectionable about it, but maybe the issue is on the other end. I mean, maybe the bracha itself doesn't necessarily get you the food. And maybe the problem with interpreting the Gemara as saying that the food is what you're stealing is that the rest of the sentence would have to be that making the bracha acquires the food for you. And maybe we're not sure that's what happens. So that's something to think about. Is it that the bracha is the kinyan on the food? Maybe not. Maybe even after the bracha, you still don't acquire the food. Maybe you're still eating God's food after the bracha. Maybe the bracha is an acknowledgement that the food that you're eating is still holy. And you're still eating at God's table. So perhaps that's why Rashi doesn't want to go there. But one would have thought that the language, kipshuto, is that you're stealing the food. So this has significant ramifications. Because how literal is it, this idea, that you are actually taking the food without permission if you fail to make a bracha? And that you are stealing it, if that's the interpretation you would have against Rashi. So this is behind a number of halachic discussions. So we know in practice, and this was a part of our discussion yesterday, that we say safek brachos lahakel. That's what's paskened in Shulchan Aruch. And it's a discussion a little bit why, but the assumption we've been making the past few days is that it's because brachos are drabanan. And that's what caused a little bit of tension, because the whole svara issue gave us reason to think that brachos are deraisa. We had other reasons maybe to think brachos are deraisa. But lamaisa, we assume brachos are drabanan, as indicated by the fact that we say safek brachos lahakel. And various gemaras say a balkari doesn't recite a bracha out loud. An onen, who's not allowed to do positive mitzvos, doesn't recite a bracha. So we have various indications like that, that we don't have an active obligation to make brachos in certain situations. And we say safek brachos lahakel. So all of those indicated that brachos are midrabanan. And we talked a little bit about that tension. We mentioned that there were other attitudes that the Bnei Yeshua, for example, thought maybe it was because we're more worried about issues of bracha lebatala, and that was creating some counterforce. And maybe even if brachos were daraisa, maybe we'd have a different policy than usual, and we wouldn't go full safek daraisa l'chumra because we have other things to worry about. So we'll have to come back to the issue of how exactly we look at bracha lebatala and the impact that has on this issue. For now, let's assume that we say safek brachos lahakel because of the status of safek drabanan lekula. So that being the case, if you saw Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilyan Hashas to the first parak, we can actually look at it together. Let's do that, just to see it inside. or the Kiva Eger in the first parak, commenting on Atosis in the Gilei Nashas. So he asks a question, which is not only his question. It was asked before by the Maharsha and the Evan HaOzer. And actually, we'll mention in a minute, was asked even earlier than that. But they ask, it's against the Halacha Pesukah here in Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. So commenting on a Tosfos. So there's a Tosfos here, which has a suffix what to do about a certain bracha situation, and becomes the whole Machlokas Rishonim. So Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilei Nashas here, and Yud Beis Amud Aleph says, V'lo shayachach alomar suffix brachas lahakel. That here, we're talking about a bracha Rishonah. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, you cannot apply here the rule of suffix brachas lahakel. So the Chvarkasav HaRasha, that's Marsha, and Sachem Kufayz Amud Aleph, D'lo shayich kein, ela bebrichas ha-mitzvos. This is a chiddush. Says the idea of suffix brachas lahakel only applies to brichas ha-mitzvos. When you're not sure whether to make a bracha on your tefillin or on a lulav, so then you can leave out the bracha. D'ha-brachos ein ma'akvos. If you perform a bracha without reciting, if you perform a mitzvah without reciting a bracha, the mitzvah is still good. So there, if you're not sure if you're supposed to make the bracha, you can leave out the bracha. Aval bebirchas hanenin, you can't apply this rule to birchas hanenin. Why? Because aser lecho below bracha. Our Gemara Lamed Hey Min Aleph says you're not allowed to eat without a bracha. So below heavy kan chash bracha levatala. So then don't worry about a bracha levatala because that's not the issue. There's no bracha levatala. Dim lo yivarech hey aselo lishtos. If you're not going to make the bracha, you'll be left with an issur. So the Evan Ozer says the same thing. So he leaves it like that. So again, this is against the halacha that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. We don't pass him like this from Rabbi Kiva Eger. But this is the point that Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Evan Ozer and the Maharsha bring, that the rule of Safek Brachos Lahakel, which again, as a matter of practical halacha, we do apply to brachos on food. But Rabbi Kiva Eger says that it shouldn't apply, and in his opinion, maybe it wouldn't apply to a bracha before eating, because the Gemara says here, it's also to eat a lot of brachos. Do you have an iser? And if it is the concern of bracha levatala that's getting out in your way, it's not levatala here. You need it to eat. You won't be able to eat without it. So you have the sister getting in your way, you're going to have to make the bracha. You're raising your hand?
Yeah, I think you can go back for a second and apply this Rabbi Kiva Eger to the Rambam to explain his multi-pronged approach.
Okay.
And split it into multiple prongs of types of brachos like the Rambam himself did.
Okay.
You can, right, Rambam himself separates mitzvos into birchos amen and birchos mitzvos and birchos hodah. So it's fairly easy to apply this and to say that the in Yisodei Torah, and the Rambam was talking about a lot of the ideas of Yira and Hodah and Kavod to Hashem, according to Rabbi Kiva Eger, could theoretically be going only for Birchos HaMitzvos, or specifically for Birchos HaMitzvos. Whereas the Birchos HaNanin, it's based on his Lashon in brachos in brachos, both Hilchos brachos based through Dalad and by Aleph based through Dalad and Aleph Yutes, then brachos anenim seem to be much more of asking permission, similar to the Rashba, and brachos hodah seem to be like Rashi.
Interesting. And Birchos Hanen are that permission also.
Yeah.
They're both.
No, meaning that Birchos Hanen are similar to the Rashba. He uses the Lashon of Ke'ilah
But right. Only about permission?
Seemingly.
Because he does still link them. He does mention them together with Berachos and Mitzvos.
I mean, he sets up the structure of the fact that there are three types of Mitzvos. He doesn't necessarily say that they're there for the same reasons.
But that point about Yira seems to apply to all of them. I mean, it could be that there's also an aspect of permission.
In Sefer HaMitzvos, he's talking about
Berachos and Mazon.
Berachos and Mazon. So that's... doesn't exactly help.
But in Mishnah Torah.
Sorry?
In Mishnah Torah. In the beginning of
Yisodei HaTorah, he's not talking about Brachos specifically at all.
Right, but in the beginning of Hilchos Brachos.
Beginning of Hilchos Brachos, he says, he doesn't mention... In Halacha Beis, he's only saying regards to Brachos Anan. Only by Halacha Gimel does he mention Mitzvos and Hodah.
But then in Dalet, doesn't he mention altogether?
In Dalet, he sets up the structure of there are three and he does list all the reasons together.
Right, so it could be that it's permission also, maybe.
Right. So you can either split them up or you can leave them together.
Right.
So the Rebbe Kivedo would help split them up.
Right. So, and he does split them up, right? So he says so that the idea of Safik Lakula only applies to mitzvos. But it can't apply to Berachos Anan because you have the Isser. So here you have a very literal take on Asr Lanos Be'ol Mazat B'lo Bracha. And maybe a very literal take on the Gzela idea. That Rabbi Akiva Eiger is basically saying that you have Gezel in front of you. He's not focusing on the Gezel, but presumably it's about seeing that all together. And you have this Isser. So how could you say Sofik Lahakil? You're just not allowed to eat the food without the bracha. So leaving out the bracha is not an option. So the fact that he's citing a Maharsha to this point may help us, because the Maharsha may be l'shitaso, right? Because the Maharsha on our daf, different than Rashi, the Maharsha took the more intuitive reading of our Gemara and saw the food as the object of what's being stolen. So if you understand that without a bracha, you're stealing the food, so that's a little more compatible with this concern. So if I'm stealing the food, if I don't make a bracha, so how could I ever leave out the bracha? How could I ever say Safek Brachos Lahakel? So the fact that the Maharsha was the one who asked this, who said this point before Rabbi Akiva Eiger did, is perhaps more easily understood as L'shitaso and how he understands the idea of Gozel, of Kilu Gozel. But nonetheless, this is still not how we assume Lahalacha. So why not? So there is a long tshuva of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the tshuva of Mincha Shlomo in Chelek Aleph and Siman Yud Ches, where he talks about a lot of things, and he has one section later on of Siman Yud Ches where he talks about this specifically. And Reb Shlomo Zalman takes issue with this Reb Akiva Eiger. And he says it's not what's going on. He says that whether or not, he doesn't get in specifically to the question of whether the subject of the gzela is the bracha or the food. If you say that the subject, if you say like Rashi, then for sure you don't have to come on to this kind of understanding. But even if you say like the Maharsha, so the idea is, explains Reb Shlomo Zalman, that the Isser is a result of the Chiyuv. We have a Din D'Rabbanan of Berachos Anan. Chazal created an obligation to recite Brachos. And as a result of that Din D'Rabbanan, there's an Isser to not make the Brachos. There's an Isser to eat without the bracha because there's a chiyuv bracha. When there's no chiyuv bracha, there's no Isser. So, when is there no Isser? Let's say, for example, an Onain. Right? An Onain is not allowed to do Isurin. An Onain is exempt from positive mitzvahs. An Onain can't eat treif, but he can eat without a bracha. And he should eat. He's not allowed to make brachas. So why does an Onain eat without a bracha? Because the Isser of eating without a bracha is only a reflection of the Chiyuv bracha. If he doesn't have a Chiyuv bracha, he has no Isser. So that shows you, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that's another reflection of this idea, that the Isser only comes from the Chiyuv bracha. You have no Chiyuv, you have no Isser. So if the rule is Safek brachos lahakel, so then it means that when there's a Safek, there's no Chiyuv. If there's no Chiyuv, there's no Isser. So this Isser doesn't apply in the situation of Safek. Shulchan Aruch says Safek lahakel. So then this Isser doesn't apply. So you don't have to come on to Rabbi Akiva Eger's conclusion, which again is against the halacha. And to throw in a little synergy here, which only one person in the room is going to know about, this is a synergy to Seder. So somebody was asking me yesterday, somebody in this room, a question about Tfilas Kalim. And the question is, can you use a kli that you can't be Tovil? This is a side point to the question. So Shlomo Zalman talks about that in this tshuva, this synergy, right? It's out of nowhere, he talks about that in this tshuva about our sugya. Who would have thought? Because he writes there, says that, specifically, the next paragraph in this tshuva, he talks about that issue, because he says, the only extent to which there is an isser to use a kli that has not received tvila is because there's a chiyuv of tvila's kelim. He says the only Isser would be on a rabbinical level because it reflects the neglect of the chiyuv of Tfilas Kalim. But if Tfilas Kalim would be impossible, so then there wouldn't be any Isser to use the kli. So he says that's a comparison to this situation, that the only Isser to eat from food without reciting a bracha is a reflection of the Chiyuv Bracha. But if there's no Chiyuv Bracha, there's no Isser. So therefore, you don't come on to this Chiddush that we can't accept Safek Brachos L'Hakel. Okay, everybody with me? So this is true even if you say, like the Marsha, that it's the food that is the subject of the Isser. Even if you say like that, still it means that the nature of this concept is it was called Gezel once the Chiyuv Bracha was ordained. But certainly if you say like Rashi, all the more so this makes sense. If you say like Rashi, it's the only way to see it. Like Rashi is saying that there's your Gozel, the Bracha. So then, for sure, that's what it means. That once there's a Chiyuv Bracha, failing to make the bracha is the Isser. And that's the only way to understand. But the bigger chiddush is that if you say that it means you're stealing the food, so still we have to explain that failing to make the bracha still is what creates the gezeila because of the chiyuv. Now, let's say, yeah?
So in a safek, if it's a safek, there would be no Isser?
Correct, because since the din of the Safek is, since the rule of Safek means that we're mako, so it means you're not obligated to make the bracha. So since the Isser comes from the Chiyuv, if there's no Chiyuv, there's no Isser, so yes. So therefore, the concept doesn't apply, which is what the Akiva Eger was denying.
So the Akiva Eger would say there's no Chiyuv, but there's an Isser, so that's why...
Well, no, he would say that it'll come around the other way. He'll say that since there's an Isser, so then there's a Chiyuv.
So it's which one?
It's a kind of a circle, but the circle then turns the other direction. Uh-huh. You say there's an Isser, so how could you ever say there's no Chiyuv? The Isser is going to create the Chiyuv. So how could you say Safek Lekula?
It's a question of which is in the driver's
seat. Right, what comes first? The chicken or the egg? He says you start with an Isser to eat without a bracha. So how could you have a rule of Safek Lekula here? You're always going to have to say Safek Lehachmeh. So he says this chiddush that you can't say safek lahakel by berachas hananin because the iser is always going to require you to make a bracha. Now that is a big chiddush again against the Shulchan Aruch, but he's not the first one to say it because you see here he credits the Marsha, and then he says that he also notes that the Evna Ozer said it. But they weren't the first ones to say it either. So if you saw on the Makaros, it was said earlier than them. It was said essentially by who else? You saw us in the Makaros? It was actually said by the Ritva in his commentary to Shabbos, the second parak of Shabbos, Daf Chav Gimel. So that's a tremendous thing. And actually, I learned this from Rabbi Neuberger, because Rabbi Neuberger quotes this in his Sefer. And on the way in just now, I passed Rabbi Neuberger in the hall, and I thanked him for illuminating us, because that's a tremendous chiddush, so that apparently the Ritva was only printed later, it was only accessible later, so nobody knew that the Ritva said this before. But this is a tremendous find, that everyone quotes this Rabbi Akiva Eiger, but it's in the Ritva beforehand. So it could be that there's a slight nuanced difference from where they're coming from, but it's almost exactly the same thing. That essentially, or very close to the same thing, that essentially the Ritva asks this question. He seems to accept as a given, because if you recall, Tosfos, we discussed yesterday, when making the point that brachos are drabanan, Tosfos is quoting Gemaras. The Gemaras have made the point that we treat brachos as drabanan because there are situations where we don't require a bracha. So the Ritva seems to also take it as a given that there are situations where we'll eat without a bracha. So if that's the case, so the Ritva says that it's still hard to understand, because how could it ever be that since the Gemara says, asa lehanos below bracha, so if you have a safek, we should say that you should make a bracha. Or we should say that you shouldn't be allowed to eat anymore. But that should be the preferable choice. And if you're not sure, then better not to eat than to keep eating without a bracha, and he leaves it at that. He just leaves it essentially as a question. So that could be the Ritva Lishitaso, that if the Ritva essentially is saying that that's a svara that is compelling, essentially, that Chazal were picking up on, especially we saw yesterday that the Ritva says that once the Pasuk was perceived of Lashem Haaretz Umeloa, and then Chazal understood from there that it's essentially wrong on a Torah Shebichzav level to be Nene from Olam Hazeh below Bracha. So whether you see that as Gezel or not, but it's so wrong, so then how could you say you should be able to eat without a bracha because of the suffix? It would seem like better not to eat anymore. So whether it's coming from the exact same place as Rabbi Akiva Eiger, maybe it's coming from a slightly different place, but it's almost the exact same thing. So it's a very interesting discovery. Hi.
It may sound like a stupid like exception question, but...
No, it's nothing stupid.
I remember like an exception question, but I'm curious if it highlights the point. Mm-hmm. If someone were not able to speak and they're mute or just temporarily mute, or just, you know, couldn't speak for a certain amount of time for whatever reason, and were they not, according to the Ritva and the Rabbi Akiva, would they just not be allowed to eat, or is there any type of...
So not only is that not stupid, that's a good question, but that is the perfect segue, because that's what I want to talk about next. So, not surprisingly, it was a very good question. So, there is a tshuva about that in the Minchas Asher and others. So, it's exactly the next question. So, and the Shevet Alevi has a tshuva about that. So, Rav Asher Weiss in his tshuvas Minchas Asher, so he asks, as do others, so what about a situation of onus? Right, so, since the Gemara has this language of aser lehanos below bracha, so what happens when, for whatever reason, a person can't make a bracha? So do we say that likewise he's not allowed to eat? So it's interesting because you were asking about the way you were asking the question. So he has this tshuva, the Minchas Asher, And he starts off his tshuva saying, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, I'm not sure exactly what the Messias is and why you can't make the bracha. I said, because the Gemara does talk about here are kedivor situations where a person could think about the bracha.
Alone, yeah.
Right, so you think alone, it's not Nubu Shemaya Kona. That's a discussion of itself, whether there's a relationship between those concepts. But he says at the beginning of his tshuva, he says, I'm not sure exactly the scenario you're asking about, otherwise I might respond differently. But he says, whatever the fact case is, let's take it as a given that there are situations where a person may find it impossible to make a bracha. Maybe in an unclean place, maybe any number of reasons. But he says, it happens to be that the shoal wasn't so clear exactly what the nature of his situation was.
I was asked about that. The rabbi says you can make a bracha like in your own mind? Or?
Theoretically, that could be possible. It's a discussion. The Gemara has such a case. And that's it's in a whole interesting sugya of itself, which is a Gemara of Brachos, hopefully we'll get to in a different context. But it happens to be that he starts off his tshuva saying that the one who asked wasn't clear about exactly what he was asking. So he says, but I will just take it as a given that for whatever reason, the person finds it impossible to make a bracha. So he says, so therefore, without figuring out the exact facts of the situation, so what should the rule be? Right? If somebody is in a situation where it's impossible to make a bracha, so then how literally do we say that you're stealing and therefore you can't steal no matter what? Or do we not mean it exactly like that?
I forget which source exactly it was, but I think it was a Rashi and a Gemara that said if you're like in bed and it's impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was Taz.
The Taz, then you can just be maharder, believe, and just, I guess, think about it, which I think would fit nicely with the Rambam who said before, and that if it's just about the idea of acknowledging God, that would still instill maybe the same sort of fear as also verbalizing it, be able to just think about it, have it on your mind, maybe that would work.
That's a fascinating point. I wasn't even going to link those necessarily, but so that also just gets to, we're going to bring that in for a different reason, but that's also interesting. It's a very, very interesting thing to consider. How much does the purpose of a bracha allow you then to define what types of second best could qualify? That's a very interesting area to explore. So the whole concept, let's say, of Hira Kedibur, which is a sugya, hopefully we'll have time to get into. Right, so Eric, you're asking about someone else's there. So the concept of Shmei Ka'ona is a more well-known idea. There's also a sugya of Hira Kedibur, and it's a very interesting discussion. I hope, definitely, God willing, to get to this year about the relationship or non-relationship between the two. But that's relevant here, that the Gemara does say that there are people who can not verbalize a bracha, and that could also work. So, however it comes up, so the question is, how far do you have to go? So, he discusses there, Rav Asher, that if you really believe that failing to make a bracha is an actual iser or an actual act of theft, so then you might say that you need pikuach nefesh, essentially, to justify eating without a bracha. But if you see it more that it's not really stealing in the objective sense, but that the iser is a result of the neglect of the chiyuv, so then if you're an onus on the chiyuv, so then the iser goes away. So if you can't perform the bracha right now, so then there's no iser.
It's all Rav Asher Weiss.
Yeah, but he refers also that the Shevet Alevi has others have truths about this also. Rav Shlomo Zalman also has a discussion about different points of this, but the Shevet Alevi also has a tshuva, and he notes there that Rav Asher notes that the Shevet Alevi is more machmir about this. Like the Shevet Alevi talks about, if you're a very extended amount of time where you're unable to make the bracha, and it becomes very, very difficult. So Rav Asher writes there, he says he doesn't think it really has to be extraordinarily difficult, because it's not about the tsar, even the Shevet Alevi agrees, it doesn't have to be pikuach nefesh. So if you're dealing with literal theft, so you might need it to be pikuach nefesh in order to justify stealing from somebody to save your life. But let's acknowledge it doesn't have to be literal pikuach nefesh, but does it have to be tremendous tsar? So Rav Asher Weiss notes there that he doesn't even think it really needs to be on that kind of a scale. That the point is that if we can establish that it's impossible to make the bracha, so then the iser is a consequence of the mitzvah, and if you are unable to do the mitzvah, so then you don't have the iser. So then he notes then that the question of, so he notes that the taz that your own referred to, if you're in bed, so you're not obligated to get out, so then that the Mishnah Berurah distinguishes between that and somebody who's in the bathhouse, so is there very subtle differences in terms of how much tircha you're expected to put up with? So it becomes a little bit subjective, figuring out what exactly is called an onus, and what's an onus you can get out of. So this may sound familiar, because this also gets a little seasonal, will get seasonal soon. It also is evocative of questions of when you're exempt from sukkah, and what kind of situations are called mitzdar, patr, mina sukkah, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the same kind of dynamic, but there's different factors that go into the sukkah question. But essentially, applications aside, this is the concept that's at the core here, that if you assume, extension of what Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote, that the iser is only there as a consequence of the chiyuv. If the chiyuv isn't there, so then the iser isn't there either, so then, to whatever extent you can establish that that's the case, so then you're not going to have the chiyuv bracha either. Okay, so there's more to say, but we have a chiyuv mincha, which we're not officially anusim on. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about, and then we'll break and we'll go down. So just to quickly review what we spoke about, so we spoke about the question of if we say there's a kein derais with brichas hamazon, so what would that mean for us? So Rashi seems to understand both brichas hamazon and brichas hanenin as a function of hodah. Even if, as was brought up, there's good basis to distinguish between Berachas Hananin and Berachas Hamazon, but still, there's also good reason to connect them and still distinguish within that. And then, to note that the Rambam could see both as not necessarily about Hodah, but acknowledging Kodesh Baruch Hu within them, and for the purposes of Yira, which is also supported by Chazal, seeing the Pasuk of Mashem Lekech HaShol Mimachin LeYira as connected to Mea Brachos, that Brachos are about Yira, about taking a pause, all the types of the three categories of Brachos, about pausing and acknowledging God in that context, so that would fit well. And then we talked about this idea of Ki'ilu Gozel and Nenna Bracha being an iser, so how literal is that, and what does it mean? So first of all, the question is, what are you stealing? So Rashi notably deviates from what you would have thought, the intuitive pshat, that you're stealing the food. Rashi says you're stealing the bracha. So why does he do that? So we have to reflect upon why that is. One possible reason is maybe he doesn't think that making the bracha makes it yours. So that's something to think about. But it's the less intuitive interpretation. Marsha says the more intuitive interpretation, that it's about stealing the food. And then we saw that this whole question has major ramifications, because Rabbi Akiva Eiger moves away from the accepted halacha and says that the concept of Safek Brachos L'Hakel, which we assume applies to Brachos Hananin, so if you're not sure about whether you should make a bracha or not, you don't make it. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says not true, that you have to make a Brachos Hananin for food always, because otherwise you have an iser to eat, so how could you eat without a bracha? And he says that's also the Maharsha's view, which makes sense, Maharsha l'shitaso, because the Maharsha understands that the gzela applies to the food, so how could you steal the food? You have to make a bracha first, so that would make sense why he would say that. But as Rav Shlomo Zalman explains, that that's not the way to understand it, that the iser only exists because of the chiyuv. If the chiyuv is not there, so then there's no iser, and he compares it to tefillas kelim, that an iser to use the kelim without tefillah is only because of the chiyuv. If you're not able to do the chiyuv, or you don't have the chiyuv, you're not able to do it, so then there's no iser. So too, if you can't make the bracha because of whatever reason, so onen or valkeri, or because of safik brachos l'hakel, so then there's no chiyuv, and therefore there's also no iser. And that is interesting to note, that Rabbi Akiva Eiger, as much as we don't paskin like him, but he's not the only one to say it, he references the Maharsha and the Evan Ozer, and Rabbi Neuberger introduced us that also the Ritva said it first. Ritva said something very similar. We discussed it. Maybe it came from a different place, but it was something very, very similar. And that's also quite noteworthy. And we noted that another major nafkamina of this would be any situation of ones, that if a person is unable to make a bracha, would you say, well, too bad, you're not allowed to eat? Or if you're unable to fulfill the mitzvah, so then maybe the Isser goes away, and that was discussion in the Shevet Alevi and the Menachos Asher. The Shevet Alevi seemed to have a higher standard of just how much you had to tolerate the onus, and the Menachos Asher was noted towards saying that there's a lower standard, that as long as it's impossible to make the bracha now, you don't have to be miserable, you just have to be unable to make the bracha, and then the Isser would presumably go away. And we talked about what exactly the fact case there is, the subject to a little bit of discussion. There might be different sets of facts. It may be also relevant to determining how much you have to move away from those situations. But that aside, the concept is that if there's an onus on the bracha, so then maybe there is no chiyuv and maybe there's no iser, and we'll determine a little bit more in the future as to how that may play out. So still more to go as far as this basic introduction, but that's a very significant step as far as understanding what's going on. Again, tomorrow, the fifth aliyah of Kisavo, a lot to explore within that, and looking very forward. I will go to Mecca.